All right. We are at 3:59 on Thursday, April 28th, just a minute in front of the Get a Clue interview series, the fourth installment for April with Kit Goldman. So just about a minute to go before 4 o'clock, we'll get started with the call. All right. Well, I've got 4 o'clock. Welcome. And thank you, first of all, for being on the call. If you're here live on the call or if you're listening to the recording of the call, this is Jeff Klubeck. I am president of Get a Clue Incorporated and a senior consultant with Wealth Management Consultants. And this is the Get a Clue 2011 interview series. And I just want to start off and say thank you and welcome. And I really mean the thank you part. You may not think it's a big deal. You may be excited about today's interview, but it is a big deal. It takes time out of whatever it is that you're doing to find value on this call, whether you're listening live or the recording. It means a lot to me, so I just really want to start off with my gratitude and thank you for being here. Also, if any of you are return callers, if you've been on any of the conference calls in the past, thank you for helping me achieve last year's goal of doing one conference call every month. And those you may recall that last year was all about content. Every conference call was me delivering content. But this year, I'm doing one interview every month with expert leaders or thought leaders or subject matter experts or exceptional storytellers, people of inspiration and expertise. And so I'm really excited about today's call and today's guest, Kit Goldman. Before I get to that, some logistics about participation in the call. Everybody is starting off on mute now. I just want to declare up front. I've had some technical problems with this in the past. I used to start off everybody unmuted, but sometimes it would be an interruption in the call with background noise. I'm going the other way around today. I'm starting everybody off on mute. Now, I believe to unmute, I think it's either *5 or *6. I'm not exactly sure, but if you want to get a question in, if you're dying to jump in and get a question in or get a comment in or what have you, then and you find yourself unable to, then here are some ways that you can get a message through to me during this call. On Skype, if you have Skype, I've got that open. I can get an instant message on Skype. It's get.a.klu, get a clue with the dot in the middle. On Facebook, it's Jeff Klubeck or Get a Clue. You should be able to find me. Email is wide open, jeff@getaclue.net. And of course, you might even be able to send a text message to 619-405-3356. My apologies if you want to be heard live on the call and find yourself having problems unmuting. But as always is the case, I've got more content than time. We've got an hour together today. And although I always love for people to jump in with comments, I don't expect there to be any time because I know that we've got so much to talk about. Now, just one last statistic before I really open the content and open the interview itself. This call is being recorded. If you do figure out how to unmute yourself and your voice or any of your background noise is heard on the call, I just want to let you know this is being recorded, and by staying on the line, you give me your consent. Really, you understand and you acknowledge that I may be using this recording in marketing or in sales programs later on, and you kind of agree not to come after me for money, right? In short terms. So, but on the good note, there is a recording available. If you have to jump off the call, or if you know friends that wanted to be here that couldn't, a recording is going to be available. So keep that in mind as well. Now, all logistics out of the way, let me go ahead and introduce the interview itself. And we're talking about Kit Goldman, edutainment professional extraordinaire. Now, listen, I got to start off by talking to you about when I first met Kit. Many of you may know that in the early part of 2010, I became a senior consultant with Wolf Management Consultants to leverage the experiences that I had with Get a Clue and really expand my reach into more, corporate environments rather than just the small and micro business arena. And in our efforts to grow the name and brand of Wolf Management Consultants locally, Jeff Wolf, the owner, called a meeting together of all the consultants that he had locally, and that's where I got to meet Kit Goldman and Memo Mendez, who they themselves have the Workplace Training Network, but just like me, they have their own business, and they plug in and leverage themselves with another a channel for business development and so forth. So that's where we first met. And sometimes, you know, it just happens. Like, I know everybody listening to the call or the recording, you know, when somebody walks into a room, there's just an energy and a click, and it happens for Kit and I. We immediately saw things in each other that reminded us of ourselves, a fast-paced, get-it-done, attentive, people-oriented, relationship-building, best of yourself, all the good things, all of the good qualities about your success, I saw it in Kit. And we just immediately took to one another, and it wasn't long before, she, you know, her and Memo were doing guest presentations in my classroom, and, you know, now we're currently collaborating on an exciting program we want to tell you about towards the end of the call. But maybe you have that experience out there where you meet with somebody and there's a chance for collaboration that may or may not work, but not with Kit and I. Right away, we knew that we were going to be working together, and so far, so good. But what I'm excited about is that you get to meet Kit today. And if you really want to pay attention, you really want to stay on this call, if you're a business owner that has started your own business, if you're a college student thinking about you're developing a career, building a career, if you are a professional for that matter, you know, either in transition or if you're a job seeker or if you're employed or disengaged with your current work, thinking about making a change in your career, or if you're an HR or a training professional or an entertainment professional, I mean, if you're any of those, you don't want to miss the rest of this call. I know from my experiences working with Kit that there's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of valuable information and inspiring insights on the call. And you don't have to take my word for it. Let me either share a little bit with you about Kit herself. I mean, this is a woman that has built and operated two professional theaters here in San Diego's Downtown District. She's a producer of over 100 plays and musicals. She was also producer of the American Dance Awards for ABC Television, featuring some, you know, very, very interesting pop culture icons like Sammy Davis Jr. and Paula Abdul. But in addition to that, in the community, she's developed anti-violence campaigns that have been adopted by hundreds of school districts across the country, you know, through the grant writing and the grant granting, you know, process. And in addition to that, through Workplace Training Network, she's responsible for the training of literally hundreds of thousands of executives, managers, employees across industries that are as diverse as the World Wrestling Federation to the Navy to, you know, the PAWN, P-A-W-N, industry. And she's, of course, has frequent appearances in the national media as a workplace expert, and her education is near and dear to my heart. She's a cum laude graduate of SDSU, so we're fellow Aztecs, but her career includes journalism and essay and speech writing, and she's a certified consumer arbitrator and recipient of dozens of awards for professional accomplishments and community service. And it's just my great, great pleasure to have Kit Goldman with us on the call. Kit, how are you?
Jeff, how else could I be but fantastic after hearing that great intro? Thank you so very much for that, and thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be with you today. Thanks.
Well, listen, you know, I could have gone on. I could keep on going with you.
Okay,
there's so much to say. Well, the thing is, you know, it's consistent with my problem is that there's always more to talk about than there's time. And you and I can talk for hours and hours. But I wanted to preview for the people on the call just some of the things that we're going to be touching on today. And definitely want to get some of your memoirs, you know, from helping pioneer the entertainment in the Gaspap District as we've come to know it today. And talk about success education topics like collaboration and skill migration and the things that we learned through sales experiences and business development. So there's a lot of things that we can touch on, and we may literally run out of time. But the first thing that I'd like to do, Kit, is I want you to introduce yourself to us. Tell us about yourself. How, what's the quickest way for us to get to know Kit? Tell us a little bit about your story. Who are you?
Well, hey, I grew up in West Hollywood. And from the time I was a little kid, I was involved in performing in live theater, and I also was a producer early on. I always was putting on shows, and I was a little kid, like 7, 8 years old. I would gather up the kids in the neighborhood and bring them to my backyard, charge them a quarter, and have my cats put on a show for them. And my parents were involved in a lot of community theater. I came to San Diego as a teenager. And when I got out of high school, I got a job selling advertising for the Union Tribune, and then I put myself through San Diego State University as a single working mommy, got a degree in child development, became an early childhood educator for a couple of years. But then, Jeff, I'll tell you, the passion for the theater, it came calling to me big time. So I rolled the dice, and looked at gas lamp because it looked to me like it had a future and I could probably get a really cheap space down there. And I set out and decided I was going to be opening a professional theater, and so it was.
Well, so you know, I'm proud of the fact that I'm a San Diegan, and not everybody listening to this call lives in San Diego or will be from San Diego, but for those that, you know, have been in San Diego and do love San Diego the way I do, talk to us about some of the special memories of building a theater, or two for that matter, and pioneering your entertainment work in the early stages of the Gas Lamp redevelopment.
Well, the Gas Lamp, you know, back in the early days was, of course, nothing like it was now, but it was the vision that we had, and I think that that word vision is probably very central to everything we're going to be talking about today, because this was a beautiful historic building district with all of these gorgeous Victorian buildings that were all covered with dust and murk and muck. And I went down there and found an old 1890s Chinese dance hall and created a theater within it. I had to go out into the community and raise money to do that and have people buy into that vision, because it was a slum at that time. There were no, you know, bricks on the sidewalk or street lamps. There was no Horton Plaza, no convention center, just a beautiful old district that needed to reemerge. So I went down there. Of course, there were, you know, it was a lot of people thought it was very frightening at that time. So built a small theater, and then my former husband and still best friend, Dan Pearson, and I built the Horton Grand Hotel there at the corner of 4th and Island. And next to the Horton Grand, and the old San Diego paper box factory sat, and we converted that into a 250-seat beautiful playhouse, which is now known as the Horton Grand Theater. And now, as you know, it's one of the hottest nighttime destinations in the whole country. And so we were very, very pleased to have been there very early on and watch it grow.
What are, you know, maybe I would imagine that you have a handful of either colorful stories to share or maybe even some pieces of interesting trivia. Any nuggets like that for you know, it's fans of San Diego history?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much so. I mean, my little theater was there on where Cafe Sevilla is now, and we had a right there on 4th Avenue between Island and Market, and we had a stage door that went out onto 4th Avenue and a fire corridor that went to the backstage, and which we had to leave open. And on more than one occasion, we had homeless people come through the fire corridor and emerge onto the stage, so we had to learn how to really improv around any number of characters who actually made their way onto the stage. In fact, one night we were doing an English play, and I heard somebody say, when an old homeless man with a broom came onto the stage, say, "I think this is the absurd part." We were doing something theater of the absurd. So all of that happened. It was very colorful at the time, and you know, with the Horton Grand Hotel, every Friday night we would walk it when it was under construction, and we buried certain things underneath the foundation there, sort of little time capsule items, which 1,000 years from now, when people are wondering what the heck was going on down in Gaslamp, they're going to find some artifacts of that whole experience.
So am I hearing you right? You would bury things beneath the foundation of the hotel?
Yes, things, but not people, at least none that we're talking about today.
So Jimmy Hoffa's not going to be found there.
No, not Jimmy Hoffa, but we're not saying it's under the Hoffa relatives yet, you know. That might have been,
I got you. No, just nobody I know. I got you.
Nobody you know. There's nobody you know down there. I can guarantee you that.
Well, listen, I mean, that, you know, transitioning from the you know, what I think is some, you know, fun historical tidbits, I mean, let's face it, what you're doing is, you know, yeah, it's theater, and it's got all of its color, but, I mean, underneath it all, it's a business like any other. So there's, you know, there's a lot of members of my audience that might be, you know, micro business owners or solo business owners or solopreneurs, and facing some legitimate challenges of either starting a business or maintaining it or growing it, especially in challenging times. And so, you know, what kind of tidbits or suggestions might you have for anybody that's listening out there from your experiences of risk taking and the commitment it takes to start and follow through and build and grow a business?
Absolutely. And of course, you talk about challenging times. Those days down in the gas lamp were extremely challenging because people hadn't been down there for you know, almost 100 years. But, you know, something you really need when you're starting your business, you have to have a vision. And you have to have passion for it. It has to be a passion, I think, because of what you face and what you're going to need to fuel that quest. Because you have to refuse to quit. I know early on somebody said to me, "If you never quit, you never lose." And that really stuck with me. So you need to have an absolute commitment to do whatever it takes, and also collaboration. I mean, you need a, you know, generally speaking, in a business, even if you're a sole practitioner, you're going to need partnerships, you're going to need relationships, and also that relationship flows out into the marketing and the networking that you're going to have to do. Any business that you have, what you're really doing to have people buy into it is to build relationships. You know, when it comes to the theater, of course, there's nothing more collaborative than the theater, and that's, you know, something that I live for is collaboration. Mm-hmm. And to put on a show takes a tremendous amount of people in collaboration, but it also is, you know, a collaboration out in the community. If you have, excuse my language, you know, a lot of bucks that you need to put in the seats every single night, then the amount of outreach that you have to do is extensive. So those would be the things I think: vision, passion, absolute relentless determination, and a willingness and a love for relationship with those you work with and those you want to sell your product and services to.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's first of all, I'd agree. You know, passion. Just to recap: passion, vision, relentless determination in terms of the perseverance. I love the quote. I'll just say it again. For anybody that may be joining the call later, maybe didn't really catch it the first time, if you never quit, you never lose. So I find that's a nice little nugget. Thanks, Kit, because I'm all about success platitudes and in challenging times, micro business owners, people that feel that they're alone, they need to remember collaboration. And I'm going to ask you a follow-up question about collaboration in a minute, because I want to ask you about Memo. But before I do, let me frame a question specifically for the population of my audience, those people in my database that are either current students or recently former students, mm-hmm. or they're thinking about starting a career, quote, getting a job, or maybe they're unemployed or either displaced from a job, or maybe they're working but just totally disengaged with their work. They kind of have like one of these I have to work jobs rather than this is a stepping stone towards my vision job. And for that type of demographic, for those folks, talk to me about this, you know, your, what I think is an incredible story of skill migration and taking on career transition, because we want to talk about transitioning from entertainment professional to workplace training expert. So let me give you the floor and talk to us about that for a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I've actually migrated my skills a couple of times because I actually was a top advertising. I like to think of them as incarnations, but I was selling advertising at the Union Tribune at the same time that I was starting my theater. And I got to tell you, you know, selling advertising and sales and even waiting tables, where you have to deal nose to nose, face to face with people. And make sure that they're satisfied customers. It's tremendous training for any business. But really, when I went into the theater, that was a passion, and it was less of a bottom line venture than it was an affair of the heart, and I achieved everything uh-huh. that I hoped to from that standpoint. But when it was time for me to leave, I really wanted to get into a business where it made more bottom line sense, to be honest. Really, what I did was, you know,
wasn't it Churchill that said, if you're not a liberal by the time you're 18, you have no heart, but if you're not a capitalist by the time you're 30, you have no brain? I don't know
exactly.
If it was Churchill, so thanks for your honesty, but yeah, it's more bottom line oriented. I get it. Go ahead.
but you know what? Every single moment that I spent in the theater was so valuable to what was to come next. And I think we can say that about all of our lives, that everything mm-hmm. that we do is very purposeful into what's coming next. And so when I decided I really wanted to get into business and not be in the nonprofit world, then I had a look at what my skill set was. What could I do? And I was a performer, mm-hmm. but I also was a producer, and I also could sell. And so I started putting feelers out, and I actually started an interim business, Brooklyn Entertainment. And I read an article in the paper that talked about this company in Chicago that was producing a corporate theater. And I thought, really, what is that? So I kind of looked at what they were doing, and I had some friends in human resources, so I reached out to them, and I said, hey, what about live performance as a vehicle for training there in your workplace? What do you think? Well, it got a huge response. because there was a vacuum at that time. People said, what's out there was very boring. Well, about that time as well.
I think you're being kind.
Yeah, well, actually, they were saying we would like not to torture our people with training any longer. So if you could make it fun, we would love for you to do that. And about mm-hmm. that time, there was a big scandal that happened with the Navy called Tailhook. They were gonna have to train 4,000 sailors. They were gonna line them up at the convention center for 8 hours, and they didn't know what they had to do with them. So we started our networking, and this was just networking. I didn't know where it was gonna lead, but I knew I had to reach out into that arena and start to make contacts. And by God, someone heard about what we had in mind and said, "We have just the thing for you." Introduced us to a female commander, ex-commander of the Navy, who had gone into leadership for development. And she was going to lead the charge on this, and she hired us to write the 7 episodes that we then performed there at the convention center that all had to relate to sexual harassment, and that's basically how it got launched.
Wow. So this is a transition. I mean, first of all, congratulations. What a great thing. I mean, I know from my own experience, you know, the career that I'm in now as a coach, consultant, trainer, it really is a merging of various phases of my life or skill sets or experiences that I've gathered. So it's really special when it comes together and you find a niche and a groove. And, you know, and I think that if you love what you do, it's never work, right? Would you say that's true for you? I mean, I'm not being silly by saying congratulations, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I love what I do, and you know, it's interesting, Jeff, because we perform this approach that we developed, and it's a completely unique methodology that Memo and I have developed in the business. When it comes to performing, it is the most gratifying performance when you're sitting in a conference room and you're within inches, perhaps, from your audience. And you're having to create something that is so real. You know, there's no artifice, there's no curtain that's going to come down. You're right there, and it is really thrilling to be able to perform in that kind of an environment. So yeah, there's a lot of passion for it. Yeah.
The tip for anybody that's interested in public speaking and presentation skill development, anybody that's like listening live or the recording. So often the norm, what people are afraid of and hesitant about when it comes to this training arena, correct me if I'm wrong, Kit, but a lot of presenters, they'll hide behind the material. They'll hide behind a PowerPoint, and they'll be interacting with the material itself and letting the PowerPoint or the outline kind of do most of the work, but as opposed to your approach, the entertainment, the engagement, you're right out in front, like really making a commitment to perform
And it's extremely interactive, and you know what you're saying is so true. Hiding behind the material is a very sterile way to go. But when you make the commitment and the decision to open yourself up,
mm-hmm.
you become as transparent as you can, and you let people see who you are, and you just open up wide for them. It is absolutely amazing what happens to your audience, because then they start to do the same. Then you really can get down to the nitty-gritty and really have some meaningful, powerful, enduring kinds of discussions about these sensitive issues that we deal with.
Well, what's interesting is I don't want to go too far down a rabbit hole, but I do want to, you know, say that what we're talking about here ultimately is, you know, as a keyword I'd like to throw out is vulnerability. You know, vulnerability is the essence of love, and like, you know, to the degree, the more vulnerable we are, the greater the payoff, or the greater the potential for the payoff or the reward. Whatever would keep us from allowing ourselves to be vulnerable are probably matters of preparation, you know, and commitment and so forth. The more prepared we are, the more committed, the more it locks in with our vision, all of those things, the more vulnerable we're willing to be and the greater risk we're willing to take in order to have the life we want. So I, you know, just if anybody's listening for success principles on these calls, vulnerability is one of them. You don't want to just be vulnerable willy-nilly. I can tell you from experience, you want to rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and commit to a level of mastery that really, you know, supports the decision to ultimately be vulnerable and put yourself out there. Now, on the subject of performance and training, I don't want to get too much further in the call without talking about Memo. So I want to rewind to the success principle of collaboration, because you told us a story about how you got started in, you know, theater-based training, you know, edutainment-based training, so off you go. But talk to us now, because you couldn't be here today, but really when we talk about Kit Memo, Kit Goldman and Workplace Training Network, we're talking about Kit and Memo. So can you take a minute and dedicate the appropriate amount of time to tell us about Guillermo Mendez and his partnership with you in the Workplace Training Network?
I am always thrilled to talk about my partner, my compañero, Guillermo Memo Mendez, who is a phenomenal human being, an absolutely brilliant performer and brilliant teacher and facilitator. Memo came on board with my company early on, with our company early on, when we were doing a training all throughout Southern California for Kaiser Permanente. And we trained over 1,000 providers, physicians, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants on patient-provider communication. And we had a program where we would actually go in as patients and actually challenge these providers to deal with us on an emotional level, as they would have to do with their patients. And Memo came and auditioned for me, and the minute he came in, I could see he was a man of exceptional talent and intelligence. And as Memo got involved with the business, came on stage with us and began to learn the material, I was very, very quick that I began to rely on Memo not only just for his performing ability, but also for his ability to instruct and facilitate. And, you know, Memo and I, we've been together for over 15 years now. And I have to say, I've never, ever had a better, a more meaningful partnership. And we also, it's very interesting, Jeff, because Memo and I, we are a walking, living, breathing demonstration of the principles of communication and diversity.
Can I tease you into elaborating for 15 or 20 seconds?
Absolutely. Well, of course, you could see us. I mean, you know, but also, Memo and I come from two entirely different worlds. Okay. I mean, in every respect. But you know what? On a heart level, on a soul level, on a level of ethics and principles and trust, we are one and the same.
I'm sorry, can you give me a great opportunity to ask a follow-up question? You know, like, talking about aligning, you know, backgrounds aside, passions and values are easy to overlap with in life when people are aligned correctly. And I know for a fact that one of the values and commitments that you and Memo share is your commitment and dedication to the advocacy of at-risk youth. And I think we've got some time. I'll leave it to you. If there's more to share with us about Memo, please do. But the next question that's on the table for you is to share with us more about success, which is really given, the principle of giving and advocacy and having a cause and so forth. And I know at-risk youth is important to both you and Memo, so I'll give you control of the interview from here. What do you want to share with us?
Well, yes, and of course, Memo is essential to everything we're talking about. I mean, essential to this subject as well. I mean, again, unlike you, I believe in community service. I always commit a certain amount of my time to and energy to community service. I've always been interested in kids. My degree is in child development. I was an educator. I love kids, but I had a really transformative experience in January of 1995 when my husband and my best friend, Azim Kamisa, lost his 20-year-old son to a murder here in San Diego. Oh. Many of the listeners may remember this. He was a pizza delivery guy, and he was a student at San Diego State, and he was out delivering pizza, and he got jacked up by some gang members who put in a phony order. He showed up, and a 14-year-old was given a handgun by an 18-year-old who told him, bust him, and Tarek Kamisa was shot and killed in North Park on that night. We happened to be with our team the night it happened, and it was an experience that, you know, left us never the same, and Azim himself taught us many lessons, but we formed a foundation with Azim at that time, and because I had the experience in training and also in instructional design and with kids, I was able to create a program called the Violence Impact Forum. It was under a grant from the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Victims of Crime. We debuted it at Bernie School, where the young shooter had gone to school there in North Park. And we did it for many, many years. It's still going on, and it It's an interactive program that we do in school assembly for middle school kids, particularly to have them understand the impact of violence and to make better choices.
Wow.
That's the story I'm at. It was a, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I used to deliver pieces when I was working at San Diego State, and it is certainly in high school as well. And it's just amazing how the times have changed. I don't know if I would allow my kids to do something like that, something that I was able to do, rather fearlessly. But yeah, when you're close to a situation like that, I like, how you put it, a transformative experience. But the commitment, to be of service to others, has its gratification in a different way than a live performance might, right?
Oh, absolutely. But, it's very interesting because I can't even begin to tell you the number of business connections and life connections that developed as a result of giving to the community. I think you know this, too, because I know you're a member, of boards and do a lot of charity work as well. And out of that, that involvement with the Tara Camisa Foundation, where I was on the board for many years, came many relationships which developed into business. So that's, life does have a way of flowing back and forth, and when you operate from that kind of intent, it really does tend to bring good things your way, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it was Zig Ziglar that said you can have everything you want in life if you just focus on giving other people what they want. And what that means, underneath that, a saying like that, which a lot of people would be familiar with, is vulnerability. It's tough for people to just give, on faith, on confidence, especially in an economy like the one that we're, dealing with and coming out of. Scarcity is so prevalent, and, emotional fight or flight response kicks in, and it is really difficult for people to have faith in the success principle. The person that you're generous with may not be the exact person that gives back to you. It may come from a different direction, but if you're not operating from a place of service, then it's an uphill battle. But when you are operating from a place of service, if your first goal is to help others, it's really impressive how much good fortune comes your way.
Well, absolutely, and you said something very key a minute ago about giving people what they want. And if you're in business, if you're out there providing a product or a service, that's what you need to do. You need to find out what people want and what they
exactly.
They need. I think yeah. A lot of times people do decide they're going to get into business and give out what they want to give, but that's
You need to decide. Last year when I did a two-part conference call on sales, and that's one of the key points, is that sales is not a four-letter word. People choose sales like it's a four-letter word type of thing because there's a lot of people that ruin sales for the rest of us. In other words, what they do is they give people stuff that they don't want, or they give, like you said, people stuff that they want them to have without taking the time to diagnose and to understand, hey, what are this person's real true needs? Do I have a product or service that really truly will help this person? Because if you try to sell before you determine that, you're messing it up. And if you don't sell after you determine that, you're messing up. So sales is good. We have a responsibility to help people get what they want, but we need to diagnose and do that with ethics. So you've got some sales experience that you've had. Didn't you mention in some of our discussions that you and I share a love for sales, especially because of what we learned from door-to-door sales. Can you talk to us for a minute about, for any of the top producing sales professionals or anybody on the call that's aspiring to be a top-producing sales professional, talk to us about the value of going door-to-door. I know I did it in a couple of different capacities, but let's hear your story about doing door-to-door sales here.
Oh, going door-to-door, that's the real deal right there, because I started my door-to-door sales career back when I was about 7, and I would take my parents' magazines, and I would go door-to-door and, sell them for a nickel or a dime or a quarter, whatever I could get, and, of course, being a cute little kid makes it a little easier than when you're a grown-up, one of the things you learn to deal with is rejection, and because sales, as we know, people are going to reject you, and I was in advertising sales too, and of course that's especially in hard economic times, that's a tough one. So learning to deal with rejection, but also learning to create that relationship. you know, it's all about relationships. And so, you know, the selling advertising at the Union Tribune, the selling door-to-door, I waited tables, all of that. Waiting tables, I think, is a great underpinning to a business career, because you learn, what, you know, immediately that what you do and how you treat someone is directly related to what they're going to give you. I wanted to comment just real quickly about your saying about vulnerability, too, how true that is. And I can honestly say some of my best business relationships that I've ever had have come out of a crisis, out of a place where I might have made a mistake, I might have done something wrong or misinterpreted or misunderstood, and had an opportunity to come back to that person and admit that and make it right. And now when that ever happens, I always look at it as an opportunity, because it's really, really proven itself to be that.
Yeah, well, I learned that principle. I mean, if I could be so risque, I mean, I learned that principle a while ago with my wife, and sometimes I pick little fights just so we can make up, you know, because it's always, you know, wink, wink, but, you know, waking, you're correcting a mistake, the saying I'm sorry, you know, the ability to apologize, the courage to actually make mistakes and see them as learning opportunities or growth opportunities. I appreciate you, you know, kind of reinvesting in that point a little bit. I mean, there's so many things that spring from just this, you know, base word of vulnerability. Do you have anything else around that topic of vulnerability? I mean, there's so many things I want to ask you, Kit. We got a lot of time left in the call. But anything else around any of the success principles that we've talked about so far, like vulnerability, collaboration, vision, passion, any of those things?
Well, you know, I definitely think you mentioned a minute ago about risk taking and about the willingness to fail. I think if you read, you know, the success story of anybody who's really become, you know, a luminary in their field, you read about all of the failures that they had. And in the theater, you know, it of course, you put on show after show. You create something and it's out there for 6 weeks or 8 weeks or maybe 10 weeks if you've got a hit. But also if you don't, then you're stuck with it for 4 weeks or 6 weeks, and you have to deal with the fact that maybe at that particular moment in time people don't like what you have to offer. And so the ability to extract the lesson from it, and not punish yourself to forgive yourself for not knowing everything and move on, I think that's big. I think, you know, when I was earlier in my career, when it would turn out that there was something I didn't know or I made a mistake, I would really berate myself for it. But now I let it go a lot quicker. So if I can help anybody that's listening to learn from their mistakes, take the lesson, and just, you know, discard it, put it in the circular file, and move on as quickly as you can.
Yeah, from a philosophical perspective, too, there's a law of diminishing returns. The more time in our life that we spend trying to prevent or avoid mistakes, then what does our life become all about except not living it? You know what I'm saying? It's a negative downward spiral, you know, to just touch on the philosophy of it. You got to embrace life. You got to, you know, that's part of, again, back to vulnerability and risk-taking and fearlessness. I mean, you know, even being on this conference call, I started the conference call series at the beginning of 2010. I remember, you know, 4 o'clock rolls around and you don't know if anybody's going to come onto the call or not. You know, you don't know if you're going to mess up or make mistakes because it's a live thing. But, you know, I wanted to make sure that I did something live, which forced me to be vulnerable. And, you know, I've gotten way more comfortable hosting these conference calls over time. But I, you know, it goes back to that feeling of excitement. Like, I still want to go back to door-to-door sales a little bit. You know, Kit, visualize with me that moment where you ring the doorbell or you knock on the door, and now you know it, you have no idea who's going to open or what they're going to be like, but it's going to happen in 10, 9. You know, you hear the footsteps coming, 8. Seven, you got to be, you know what I mean? Like that moment of truth, it's like, I'm here and I've got to be persuasive and I have my pitch to make and I got to dive in. You know, you don't know what's going to happen once the curtain raises or once the door opens, and you got to immediately, like, just have all of your senses alive to be so into the person so that you can quickly build rapport and get your message out, and I just, you know, that excitement is, you know, I'm asking you if you have anything else to say about this true value.
What you're describing right there also is the entire feeling that you have when you go out and step forward to do a seminar. It is exactly the same feeling. What you've just described is exactly that. Is you don't know. I mean, they open the door and you're there, and it's both terrifying and exciting. But if if you're into relationship, if that's what makes you tick. And you want to use that desire for relationship to achieve your bottom line goals, then that is exactly what you're going to be facing. And I wanted to comment too. You brought up the subject of collaboration again, the importance of knowing what you do well and what you don't do well. Because one of the things I've learned is that there's certain areas that I'm not real strong on, and. As I've gone through my career, now I think I'm more adept at understanding that where my energy is where my energy is best used, and finding the other people to, you know, and also with entrepreneurs, a lot of times you're really, really great at starting a business, at that propulsion of energy that it takes to bring something to being, but you're operationally challenged. And I have to say that I had that is the case with me, but I've had to learn how to be a more bottom line operational person. But it's not my natural bent, and I've had to ask for a lot of help to learn how to do that well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you remember, like you said, in your partnership, the Workplace Training Network brings a lot to the table. I think you're also setting me up to even ask you to talk about our collaboration, but I want to table that for a minute. And really make sure that anybody listening on the call, live, or listening to the recording, hears more about Workplace Training Network. Now, here's what, you know, the topics that you've mentioned just in the call so far, sexual harassment. You did a training in sexual harassment. You also did something in patient-provider communication. Right, can you talk to us about the other topic areas that Workplace Training Network focuses on for workplace training in our corporate landscape?
Absolutely. Workplace Training Network, we design and deliver training live, online, and on DVD on a whole range of topics that have to do with legal and behavioral issues in the workplace. So among our core topics are sexual harassment, hostile work environment, workplace violence prevention, patient-provider communication, provider-patient communication. We also do a dynamite program that we've been doing for well over a decade with the prominent labor law firm of Littler Mendelson on workplace investigation, how to investigate complaints in the workplace. We did that for almost a decade for State Farm. And we also do hiring and firing, performance management and correction. And we've done this for, you know, clients large and small, everything from the mom-and-pop business. We have a client now in the pawn, that's PAWN industry. worked for industry leaders in the entertainment business for years. We've Olive Turner Broadcast Entities, MGM, HBO, E! Entertainment, Spelling Entertainment, all found the way that we approach this material, which could be tedious and torturous, to be, we make it a little bit more, make it quite a bit more engaging and entertaining. But that's, we do about 20 different topics, and we provide
different topics
online and live.
Yep. Now, so I'm going to ask you two questions in one kind of knock over the net. If we're playing communication tennis here, and one is about the importance of workplace training. I mean, it doesn't get underestimated for the supervisors, managers, maybe executives or HR professionals that may be listening on the call. Is it like the dust that gets swept under the rug, or is it a burden for folks? And then the other part of the question is, talk more about your competitive advantage, this whole notion of edutainment and the skill migration and the talents and skills. So, A, Workplace Training Network has a competitive advantage, and isn't it exciting to overcome some of the barriers to workplace
chain that makes it otherwise. Can you talk about this thing?
Absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, a lot of our topics are legal and compliance topics. And so
mandatory, right? Like mandatory.
Yeah, some of it's mandatory. The sexual harassment for managers in California, this is mandatory. But there's no greater protection against lawsuits than training. Because if people
mm-hmm.
know who it is they're supposed to talk to, and the supervisors and managers know what it is they are required to do should they receive a complaint, that is how you prevent lawsuits. And some people say, well, we're opening a can of worms. No. You want people to let management know what's going on so you can deal with it before they take it off to the EEOC. So the importance of it is not only to maximize productivity, to maximize the quality of the workplace, to be a place that attracts the best because it's a place people like to work, that's harmonious, there's good teamwork, which of course heightens production, but also
mm-hmm.
even if you do get sued, the fact that you provided the kind of exceptional training that we provide is going to reduce your legal exposure greatly. As far as our competitive advantage goes, I mean, look, when people have to go into a training room, we've all been there. You're watching some silly little video or listening to, forgive me to my lawyer friends, but you're listening to some lawyer on and on and on and, tell you, reading from the law. What we do is we bring these issues to life through the power of live performance and also
mm-hmm.
active people. So that the engagement and the retention level is heightened. And when people leave the training room, when we're done, they go up to the human resources director and they say, this is the thank you. They thank the human resources director for doing this training. And the human resources directors and organizational development directors are our clients, and what makes us happiest is when their team comes up to them and thanks them for the training. That's
mm-hmm.
a thrilling moment for us.
So, looking at the clock, we've got I think a fair amount of time left to talk about a couple more subjects, but I want to stay in this area of WTN, Workplace Training Network, in your areas of expertise.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you would add if I wanted to stay on the subject of your competitive advantage? Because competitive advantage for any business, and especially small and micro business owners, I think one of the key things, no matter what you're doing, is as clearly as you can say your first and last name or as clearly as you can say the alphabet, you better be able to articulate what your competitive advantage is. And the way I break competitive advantage down is, what do you do that either nobody else does, just flat out, nobody else does it, or what do you do simply better than anybody else? And so anybody that's in business for themselves better know that. And I know you've got command of your competitive advantage. So what else can anybody listening on the call today know about the competitive advantage for Workplace Training Network in providing these programs?
Because of the entertainment value, the trainees both engage, they internalize, and they retain the information. So if you're trying to stop someone from doing something that's going to create a lawsuit, your chances of preventing that are much, much higher after our training. And also, to be honest, Jeff, our pricing. We keep
mm-hmm.
our overhead really low, and we are the most powerful, effective, and cost-effective training that employers can have. And, I mean, that's bolstered by the fact that a lot of big companies that can get the whatever training they want decide to come with us, because it's training that when employees are actually engaged and enjoying the experience, they're going to retain the information, and it's very cost effective.
Well, let me add to that, Kit, and this is, maybe I'm building bridge to this last topic that I want to cover, which is our collaboration.
I can't believe you would do that, Jeff.
Yeah, but be brief with me, or be patient with me as I set this up. I want to add to your competitive advantage, just from my own experience, Kit, the level of detail that one must, I'm just trying to imagine producing a musical in a 250-seat theater where you're responsible for everything, and it's low, it's non-profit, you're relying on donors, you got to sell seats, and you know, the whole quote-unquote the show must go on principle, where no matter what's going on backstage, no matter how hysterical and how delirious and what unexpected Murphy's Law stuff happens on the way to a production, when the clock strikes the time, the show has to go up, and the people in the audience need to interact with that show without any knowledge of anything else. Like, you can't carry any of the background stuff onto stage. It can only be the show that shows up on stage. So I have such an incredible appreciation for that, because I know that as a workplace training expert, you approach it from the perspective of the show must go on, and I know that translates into a level of customer service and what I think people would refer to as value added, right? What people may not see, what I can speak to from experience, and this is the bridge that I'm building, because of our collaborative effort for the program that we're going to be offering here next week on May 3rd, I have seen firsthand how it's got to be on a ratio, I'm just, you know, making numbers up now, on a ratio of like maybe 10 to 1. The amount of details that you'll notice and handle professionally that other people in your position may not even notice and certainly may not handle and would hope will just go away or go unnoticed. You are just so accountable, and you hold yourself so responsible for seeing through and projecting like a chess game, however many moves ahead, to anticipate exactly what the customer's experience is going to be, and then accounting for every detail associated with how, what that's going to mean. And I can go on and on about that, but let me just share that with you in case you weren't thinking of it. And from my perspective, that's a competitive advantage, is the sensitization that you have to satisfying the customer, and the show must go on no matter what, and how that translates into just exceptional customer service that I've watched you firsthand deliver. And so if I can throw that out as a segue to you then talking about how I've been able to witness that. Just talk to us about, like you say, you know what you're good at and being able to approach others for expertise in certain areas. I was so fortunate that you came to me with a recent opportunity. So let me go ahead and dish it to you to talk about what's happening on May 3rd, how did it come about, and then I'll ask you some follow-up questions. But first of all, how did it come about from a perspective of our collaboration?
Well, first of all, Jeff, thank you. Thank you for those kudos and that recognition. I really, really appreciate it. You are so good at that.
It's the truth.
I appreciate the affirmation very much. Well, hey, mm-hmm. I was just so happy when this opportunity arose. I received a phone call of referral from somebody from the National Institutes of Health. As a matter of fact, back in the East Coast, who was looking for training on workplace communication. And I was just, absolutely thrilled with that opportunity, because there was no doubt in my mind who I was going to call. It sounds like the lead of the Ghostbusters. But there was absolutely no doubt, because I had the opportunity to work with you, as you described, at Wealth Management, and knew this was somebody I wanted to work with. So, when that is not my area of was not my specific area of expertise, but we knew from being in your classroom that you were absolutely unparalleled as a teacher, facilitator, guru, when it comes to communication from the inside out. So when I got the call, I immediately, there was no other choice. I mean, I called you, and we put in untold hours, and I want to return the compliment to you, Jeff, that working with you, there is no bounds to what you will give to make it the absolute best possible for your client. You didn't hold back a thing. And so that's basically how it came about.
So, well, first of all, thank you. You know, all of this, you know, it's a love fest, which I make no apologies for, you know. but let's just try to couch this a little bit. You and I have collaborated. Now, there's different phases that I think have value for anybody listening on the call. You know, because first of all, there's a discovery phase, right? There's like the sales aspect. We talked about this earlier, diagnose. You and I had to come together and get on a conference call and find out what the client wanted. Then you and I had to what? We had to collaborate on proposal writing, which is basically program development, itinerary, designing an instructional program, optimizing based on a client's needs, and then, of course, merging, your company's products and services with mine, right, and coming up with fees, and you know what I'm saying, and then packaging that, so all of the negotiations among ourselves, just between us, and then with the client, but having a united front and coming together from a perspective of service to the client and customers. I mean, I'm going to stop there. Let me, maybe you pick it up, you know, and feel my vibe. The areas, the different areas of business ownership or sales or relationship building that you and I have gotten to collaborate on. And then I'll ask you to talk about the actual program itself in a minute. But about collaboration and the different ways that you and I have collaborated in just, you know, a wonderful way that we want to share with the audience here.
Oh, absolutely. Well, as you said, we started with the proposal. We had to decide what it was, you know, what it was we were going to do, and it required for both of us to recognize, the expertise of the other in all aspects of that, and then, to deal with the financial end. And it was interesting, Jeff, because you and I, our processes, our ways of getting to a particular place, were at times different. So it really required, when we were talking about a communication workshop, we had to really live and breathe that whole process in terms of dealing with the bottom line issues, dealing with the philosophical issues. And then, we're getting together and as you said, merging our experience, vast experience out of the workplace, and your vast experience in teaching communication to adult learners. So,
there's a vulnerability there as we came together to merge our positions of expertise and process. There's a vulnerability there, and I so appreciate that you said that. We actually had to live and breathe the active and critical listening, stepping over the barriers to critical thinking. So just, and now I'm segueing into the content of our program on May 3rd. But yeah, I'll set it up and I'll let you elaborate. It's a 2-day program. The 1 day is customized for the original learner, the original participant. But what we were able to do is get creative and actually make day one of the program available to others. So I'll stop there. Kit, pick it up and tell us about the actual program itself, its content. And I know that there's still like maybe 2 seats available or something like that. So if anybody wants to get in on this, what kind of program are we talking about? What's involved? What can they expect?
Well, we have a full day program on day one that, as you said, has 2 seats left of a maximum of 12. It's going to have 5 different modules. And it's starting with an overview of communication. We're going to be talking about nonverbal communication. We're going to be talking about listening skills, talking about critical thinking, and different behavioral styles that affect communication. And you're going to be leading the charge on that. And at the same time, Memo and I are going to be performing episodes throughout that are going to bring the issues to life and be basically living hypotheticals. It's going to be a highly interactive, sort of a total immersion kind of experience where participants are not only going to learn the underpinnings of communication and what goes into it, but also the practical application of these skills in the workplace. I mean, there's a subject matter, as we've gotten into it and learned it from you, Jeff, as we've been developing the program, I cannot think of a more vital and a more beneficial topic that anybody that is in the workplace could spend a day learning. I mean, when people get out of this class, it is going to reduce the conflict. It is going to enhance the productivity. It is going to make going to work so much better for every single person there. So that's basically my take on it. It's going to be an intense, memorable day. People are going to take away actual tools in their communication toolbox that are going to really set them apart and make them leaders in their workplace.
Well, that's the stake, right, is the value of the content. And not only that, the way it's going to be delivered with, rather than just one talking head instructor, as dynamic as I may be, to have live interactive scenes acted out that bring these issues to life. The content is going to be A, so important, and B, so well delivered. So that's the sake of it. Let me add a little bit of the sizzle just because I know. First of all, this is going to be at the University Club downtown, and this is San Diego's highest point with immaculate views and a high-class upscale networking environment. It's going to be an intimate and just wonderful experience for those in attendance. But another thing is get a crew. I was so, honored and excited to be working with you, that you collaborated with me on this and brought me in as a vendor to WTN, that you gave me the opportunity to sponsor this. So I'm going to be providing, of course, Continental breakfast, and there's going to be created gourmet lunches from the university club. So that's fun.
Mm.
But another thing is, if anybody has ever worked with me as a coach or a consultant, a trainer, if you've ever seen me teach in the classroom, I'm going to go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. The registered guests that we have so far don't know this, but this may be interesting to anybody on the call. I talk back to vulnerability. I'm actually going to be one of the actors in one or two scenes. So if you are interested in all about how that's going to go and talk about being vulnerable and stepping out of my comfort zone and embracing somebody else's prophecies, and you want to see what old Professor Klubeck is like acting a little bit, then, again, there are two seats left. There are two seats left for this program.
Well, you're as awesome a talking head as there ever was, Jeff. I have to tell you that. Yeah. You're a natural on stage.
Well, listen. Let's talk about how people can get a hold of you, Kit. And before I just go ahead and put an end to the call, we can go on forever. But I'm so pleased with what we've been able to do today. Before I wrap this up on today's call, talk and speak slowly and very clearly about how people listening live that have decided to call in today, or anybody listening to the recording of this, can get a hold of yourself for workplace training, network issues, or for interest in the program coming up on May 3rd, or anything for that matter.
Sure. Let me give you three ways to do that. First of all, you can give me a call at 619-794-2718. Or you can email me at kit@workplacetrainingnetwork.com. Or please do visit us at our website, www.workplacetrainingnetwork.com.
A lot of All one word, right? All one word.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, Kit, I just want to say thank you, first of all, so much. Let me wrap up for those listening. We have been talking today with edutainment extraordinaire professional Kit Goldman. I'm just like smiling ear to ear right now because I've so enjoyed this, and I knew I would. We've covered topics from vision and never giving up to collaboration to skill migration to risk-taking, to the value of door-to-door sales, to the importance of workplace training and certainly competitive advantage. And we even got to plug our program and give each other some mutual love and respect in a public environment. It's been incredible.
Jeff, I cannot thank you enough. It's been a fantastic experience. Thank you so much, and thanks to your community for tuning in, too.
Oh, on their behalf, they're all muted right now, but on their behalf, it's their pleasure. Just trust them. All right, Kit. I'm gonna go ahead and stop the recording, and I just want to go ahead and sign off and say thanks to you and thanks to everybody else that tuned in. I hope you got some value out of it.
I want you to know that Piers Morgan has nothing on you.
Thank you so much, Kit. All right, that wraps up the April installment of the Good Acclude 2011 interview series. Thanks to everyone. I'm Jeff Klubeck. Take care.